You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, let's do this dang thing. You're on the Wake Up Tucson show. It's Patriots Day today, and we're hanging out on the phones with our good friend Michael Beatrice, who was just named one of the top three books by Natural Review. Not only did he, actually a couple of listeners sent it to me over the weekend who are Natural Reviewers going, hey, his cachet is going to get so big he'll forget about Wake Up Tucson and only be on Fox News all the time. I said, you never know. So, Michael, good morning.
Hey, good morning. You know, I was thinking about Kurt's comment when he called in last week and the imminent Pulitzer Prize for Ian Miller and me.
Well, again, I one of the biggest reviews I hear of the show over the last several months is the idea that what Kurt said, right, is that we're trying to get out information to people that's not getting put out there in a lot of the mainstream press, sad to say. And because there's been so much angst and stress over this, it's a source of comfort for him because, you know, we're trying to bring the reality to it. And I think, you know, you've experienced that through social media and emails from people across the world, right?
Yeah. For sure. You know, one of the things I most appreciated about the review, by the way, he actually landed on it being the best. just to call that out. And then I'd never met Jeffrey before, but he emailed me after this happened and reached out directly and was actually quite nice about it. And then after I read his review, I thanked him for that. But what I really appreciated is that he actually called out in the interview, and I've had a lot of readers, particularly, honestly, a lot of Democrats, a lot of self-identified liberals write me and say, hey, I really appreciate you not getting, you know, political in your book and just kind of staying to the story and letting us sort of decide. And the fact that Jeffrey called that out was meaningful to me.
Yeah, so same guy, Kurt, was one of the people who sent me the thing about National Reviews gives kudos to Michael Beatrice. And then he said, let's hope Mr. Beatrice doesn't get too popular a talk show guest so he can't keep giving Tucson the insight we need to counter the irrational fear.
That will never happen.
And the book is by George Leaf, and it's called Three Books to Read on the COVID Catastrophe. And Michael starts about fifth paragraph down. Again, I'm going to say congratulations, but I know you're not doing this for congratulations. I know you think it's the right, that's why you got into this, right? You thought it was the right thing to do in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly like Ian described last week too, and all the people that are on rational ground, and really lots of people. You just started looking at the data, and you know, I'm not a real political guy, and so this isn't like an activism thing for me. For me, it's like, God, this has got huge consequences, and so again, we talked about this before, but you know, if Twitter didn't exist, Twitter's really been the source of the foundational source of almost all the sort of reality information, whether it's from Alex Berenson or people on rational ground, and even the sort of vehicle to get that out from the Barrington Declaration docs, and so it's very important information to get out there and just to help people and kind of ground them.
Did you watch the Bill Maher rant from Friday?
I didn't watch it. I read about it. I read some of the excerpts from it. You know, one thing I like about Bill Maher, don't pounce on me when I say this, it's for the same reason I really like Bernie Sanders, is while I don't agree ideologically with a lot of them, they stay their course, and I believe they've got genuine integrity for what they believe. And so one thing I appreciate about Bill Maher is the guy's clearly a liberal, but he stays his course. And so he does have some rational thinking that goes along with this.
Well, unlike Bernie, I think Bill has intellectual honesty, right? That he can say there's things going on his side of the wagon here that they has problems, right? So in this, he refers to 69% of Republicans, 41% of Democrats think there's a 50% chance of anyone with COVID gets hospitalized.
Right. So I know the survey that he's going from, and it's, and you see that around, though, Chris, you see that around the country, and when you look at other, you know, more the higher liberal places, you know, Ian has told me a lot of stories about what life in Los Angeles is like. And I had a reader reach out to me who moved from Los Angeles to Phoenix. She said, I'm a liberal, or I was a Democrat, and California is just off the rails. And so it was, I think there's a lot of people that might have a liberal preponderance that are seeing this for what it is. And yeah, to your point, if all you're reading is sources from, I mean, the New York Times is probably now about 70-30 panic, about 30 non-panic. But if that's what you're really reading and that's your media exposure, you would be afraid, you know?
So one of the things, this is from, it's actually looked at from the Franklin Templeton Investment Nerds, talking about 6 months into the pandemic, right, that Americans were still misunderstanding what was going on, right? And so they say that on average, Americans believe that people age 55 and older account for at least half of the COVID-19 deaths. The actual figure is 92%, right? And all these things that you and I have talked about, they haven't changed.
So I can go you one better, right?
Sure.
There was a survey that came out, and it was either June or July. I think it was late June, and I've got it saved, but I don't have it. I don't recall who did it. But the survey suggested when they polled, you know, 1,200 Americans or whatever, they did this, by the way, all over the world. But when they surveyed Americans, the response was that how many Americans have died of COVID? And the response was 9%. The median response was 9%. That's 30 million people. And so if there, like, could there possibly be people that thought that 30 million people had died to COVID by July? By the way, if that was true, we would be locked down and in solitary confinement. I mean, you could make an argument for a lot of these mitigations. You can't the way it is. But if it was 30 million Americans, which would be 60 now, yeah, you could make a pretty decent argument for that.
What
doing something.
This Dr. Desai from in this Franklin Templeton piece, it's a Gallup poll that she's referring to in June of 2020. Is, I don't know if that's the same one you're talking about. So
it's a different one because it wasn't Franklin Templeton, but
gotcha.
Or you mentioned Gallup. I'm not sure. You know what? I'll find it and email it to you later on.
Got it. So in the end, you know, actually, it's funny and not funny, but Bill Maher has been consistent. He did this similar rant in the middle of the panic of last summer, right? He showed like what he said basically. It was a New York Times or Washington Post talking about the cataclysmic effect on America, and we're in this apocalypse. And then they showed a picture of some guy stocking a refrigerator section with 27 different types of bacon. And he goes, "I don't think this is the apocalypse yet. We still have 27 different types of bacon being, you know."
Yeah, he went on a rant similar when he was getting off on California's restrictions, and one of the things that he veered off into was, I guess he's doing a little remodeling on his house. And did you ever see this one?
I don't know.
And he was talking about how he needed like 15 different approvals, you know, code approvals to get, you know, basically a garage built on his property. And he's like, this is, you know, the restrictions are in California are, they're just crazy. They're just unlivable.
The other thing about it, he said he gives credit to Ron DeSantis, right, in relation to how he handled it. And he had this great line. He goes, "Oh, yes. You know why he works? Because Ron DeSantis can read."
Yeah, well, you know, it's really irrefutable. So I'll share a little data. Since I last spoke with you, I wrote a chapter for the new book that I'm doing, and it's called The Burden of Proof. And so I really went through, I graded all the governors, and I went through a lot of data state by state. And every single state in the South, from California all the way to Georgia, you know, all the ones that border Mexico or border the Gulf, they all had over 20% excess deaths throughout the pandemic. So those are a combination of COVID and lockdown deaths. Florida was only like 15% or something. So Florida stood out lower, 10 points lower than California, and lower than every other state. And so it's not just COVID deaths hitting average, but their all-cause deaths were lower than every other state in the South. And there's just really no way to look at Florida other than a success. And again, you know, the burden isn't on Florida or South Dakota or the other governors that I rated A's to, you know, really crush it in terms of COVID performance. If they do average, just average in COVID performance to the country without lockdowns and keeping kids in class, that's a win.
Right. Right. No, I agree. Michael, we're gonna go visit some sponsors. Could you please hold on, sir?
Yeah.
Awesome. We're hanging out with Michael Beatrice. The book is COVID-19 Lockdown on Trial. He's working on a new one called Burden of Proof. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30, The Voice, local news and talk. You have a question, 790-2040. Call us right now. All right. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30, The Voice, local news and talk. We're hanging out with our good friend Michael Beatrice, COVID-19 Lockdowns on Trial. Michael, welcome back, sir.
Hey, you know, I was working yesterday doing a bunch of writing, and I was it was funny, you played the song on our exit. But I'm not a particularly big fan, but I got an urge to see what he was like live, and I was watching or listening in the background to a bunch of Warren Zevon in concert clips, mostly Lawyers, Guns, and Money and Werewolves of London, but... funny you played that.
That's all Tom. That was Tom was feeling it for some reason. So here we are. Let's talk about where we are in the world of vaccines and supply and demand. So here in Pima County, I think we kind of hit our apex of people who want to get this thing. Okay. And I think it's all those people who, you know, who either of those vulnerable classes of people or feel fear, and maybe they need it, they don't need it, whatever is going on. So now the county, you know, in their brain, Michael, they say they want to keep everyone under some form of lockdown until they get 75% of a million person county of people over the age of 16 should be vaccinated.
You know, the fundamental, we'll get into this in a sec, but the question that I always ask over the last 60 days, 90 days on this is, like, it's like if you remember the end of A Few Good Men, right? And Tom Cruise is interrogating Jack Nicholson's character. And so it became a little bit circular, which is how I look at the vaccines. If you believe the vaccines work and you've been vaccinated, why do you care who else has been vaccinated?
Right.
I can't get past that question.
Because, so Ron DeSantis pounded on Fauci saying, how is this a good incentive for people to get the vaccine if you're saying, oh, if you have a vaccine, don't travel, keep wearing two masks, don't congregate, all this stuff. What's the incentive?
Yeah, I mean, Representative Jim Jordan, he really attacked him a bit. He was pretty fairly aggressive, and he probably could have accomplished a lot of the same thing with, you know, a mellower demeanor. But, you know, I like Jim. But it is a good question, and challenging Dr. Fauci on actually being an anti-vaxxer. If you believe the vaccines work,
right,
and you've had one, why do you care who else has?
Correct.
I really don't understand it. I also don't understand any kind of thinking around young people getting vaccinated. One, I think any woman who's in good physical health, who hasn't had kids, based on data, I'm not a doctor, and it's a discussion for your doctor, but I know this is also new. A lot of doctors don't know, but I would be reluctant to have, if I had a daughter who was 25, I wouldn't let her get the vaccine right now. I wouldn't. And so the idea of having young people, there was a thing that came out that said that, I don't know, baseball is kind of a bit of my past because my son played hardcore baseball and ended up playing in college. And so there's a big tournament for youth baseball in New York, in Cooperstown. New York, they had required that 12-year-olds and up be vaccinated or proof of, you know, a negative test or something prior to playing. And actually, I might not even be right in adding the second part about the test. And that's just an insane thing for kids who are at 1 in a million risk of dying of COVID. 1 in a million. They're 60 times more likely to die from a car accident, a homicide, a suicide, or an overdose. It's nuts, Chris.
I want to go back to Jim Jordan real quick. So yeah, he definitely was right in Fauci's face on this. But what he kept on asking, and he didn't get an answer from him, is what is the quantifiable place that we need to be that Americans can have their freedoms back? That was the question. Just give me a stat. Is it, you know, case infections, whatever's going on? Give me that. And Fauci wouldn't answer it.
The thing that sort of irks me a little bit about asking Fauci this in a hearing is nobody in the federal government is a decision maker in this. So I wrote a chapter on this, and I've got Team Apocalypse policy influencers, and certainly Fauci's number one on that list. But Fauci doesn't set policy, and so for Jordan to really press Fauci on that when he doesn't set policies, the governors do or local leaders do. I'm a little bit perplexed on why you go down that path. But his point is certainly valid. It's really, when is he as a policy influencer going to stop the panic porn? And again, hospitalizations are down, you know, in very, very low single digit percents due to COVID. The pandemic, I said this before, you know, it's over. It's over. COVID deaths aren't over, but the pandemic as we knew it, COVID as an epidemic, is over. And so it is a perplexing thing. Cases don't matter. They just don't matter. Because if you have a ton of young people getting testing positive and they're not getting hospitalized, who cares?
Now, what happens is the devil's advocate is, well, they're spreading to older people they could kill.
Right, but if you've got 3/4 or more of the older people
vaccinated,
that have been vaxxed, then
right.
and if you believe that vaccinations work, by the way, it gets into one other point. There's a part of personal responsibility. My angle on this book, you know. By the way, I meant to mention this earlier. I'm sure that review came out because I mentioned your name in it, right? Because I
mentioned. You're a sweet talker. All right, we got to go to
call that out, but I'm sure that was what triggered it.
He was going to give you a better review until he saw my name. So hold on for 2 seconds. We're at the bottom of the hour. We're hanging out with Michael Beatrice, COVID-19 lockdowns on trial. Give us a call if you have a question for myself or Michael. 790-2040, the phone number. And I just found the story about the Cooperstown baseball team. I'll give you some clarity on that when we come back on the tournament. Wake up, Tucson, 1030 Voice. All right, welcome back to Wake Up, Tucson. We're talking with Michael Beatrice, and again, he's provided a lot of sanity for folks out there in relation to a lot of conflicting information coming from our media and our politicians and other places. Michael, welcome back, sir.
Thank you.
So I did find the story on, as a former New Yorker, ABC Eyewitness News, Channel 7 in New York. It was the baseball tournament in Cooperstown, New York, the birth of baseball. They wanted the kids vaccinated, actually, is what they wanted for them to play.
Yeah, and I think there was a qualifier that said that if the vaccines weren't approved or able, they'd do something else, or maybe they wouldn't be able to play. I don't know. But, like, I wonder how people around the country, like, I just read an article on Fox News this morning that Oregon is going to keep mask mandates and indoor capacity restrictions in place indefinitely. And I wonder what people in these states are thinking when they look at places in the South, not just the South, but like the Dakotas and Nebraska and Iowa and Oklahoma and Texas and Georgia and Florida. What are they thinking when there's such a difference in how you're able to live their lives? I mean, this isn't a civil liberties argument, but common sense says, are they blowing up? Are they having worse COVID data? You can look at like one chart and see, well, it looks about the same or it's quieted down. Why are we in worse shape? Why are we locked down?
Yeah. When I saw that story about them doing it, I couldn't believe that was something they were, I don't know if they made it official that they were going to do indefinite masking, but just the world's gone mad sometimes. The world's gone mad.
It's just so absent critical thinking. So in my chapter I wrote last week, I rated the governors. I thought you might be interested in
a couple of the.
So I will quiz you real quick, but who would you think could have been deserving of an A?
So what's the criteria?
So some of it's some of it's anecdotal, right? Some of it's a feeling, but I can tell you schools played a large part of it. But in general, it's around stringency combined with COVID death performance. And so who?
Well, I assume Ronnie DeSantis has got to be in your top three.
Yep. I gave four A's. So I gave Kristi Noem, DeSantis an A, and I gave the governors of Wyoming and Nebraska A's. They slipped under the radar, but nobody kept kids in class more than Mark Gordon in Wyoming. Now, we can make any argument you want about the size of Wyoming, but they did better than Montana, Idaho, you know, all these other small states, you know, lower, you know, less densely populated states out there. Okay, there were, so the grades went A, B, C, D, F, and then complete fails.
Well, let me figure out Arizona. I figure he's got to be a B or a C, Doug Ducey. So where did he end up?
So I gave Doug a C, and I gave it largely because of the amount of kids that were in class. So I was able to pull up from Burbio the percentage of kids that had the opportunity to do face-to-face learning every single school day of the school year. Very fascinating data.
Absolutely.
And so you couldn't have less than half your kids or a third or a quarter, and that would have pulled Ducey lower. That was a very important thing to me, right? I think that how we've treated kids, we've talked a lot of times on the show, and I don't spend a lot of time complaining about mask wearing. I spend a lot of time complaining about why kids are out of class because the data. I mean, that's the mask wearing is a hassle, and it's not the mountain I'm going to die on, but kids being out of class is a real thing, and it would be impossible to get a high grade. And I hope history remembers it this way, not just for me, but anybody, for governors that kept kids out of class when really
they
were one in a million.
Do you have the Ducey school percentage handy?
I do. I do have it handy. So let me find it.
So this is percentage of kids that were eligible to go back into the classroom. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah. So on October 1st, 2020, 37% of schools were open for face-to-face learning. So you have to understand that pretty much around the country, 37%, whatever that number is, only about half of those kids actually opted in. So what that means is you probably had less than 20% kids. 20% of the kids in your state were doing face-to-face learning. On April 1st, it was 94%, fairly, very high number. And I think allowing some of the restrictions to linger on. I mean, to me, it was a C, right? That was a C. Like, he did average. I feel like he did okay. It wasn't like a D or F. There were more governors in the D and F and complete fails range. But I landed on a C for that.
So what happened was Doug threaded the needle, right? We call it the Goldilocks moment, not too hot, not too cold, just right. And what happened was, and he'll tell you, he got on my, like I said, he got on my case when I said he locked down, and he said he never locked down, right? Then that's a whole other story. But anyway, what happened was he said, look, we're going to, after saying my word is what rules in relation to COVID restrictions. And when things got a little hot on the first, that little second bump in the summer, he freaked out and someone said, you know what you should do? You should say, look, you're not going to do a mask mandate. You're not going to shut down schools or, lock them down from the state, but you're going to give all these other school districts and municipalities the ability to do that. And that's how this is how this happened.
And so I would have given Governor Abbott a C. I moved Governor Abbott up to a B only because of the big move in March. Not only did Governor Abbott here in Texas remove restrictions, but he basically prevented local municipalities from implementing restrictions. That was a very bold move in our current climate. And again, I graded all this on a curve, right? Nobody, in my opinion, would have gotten an A on a straight grading. But my comment was, just like kids are being graded on a curve, we're going to grade governors on a curve this year.
So I assume as Andy Cuomo an F.
Yeah, so the Fs were, you can predict those, but certainly Cuomo led that.
Gretchen.
And Do you know Gretchen Whitmer? I talked to my brother last night and knew this story, but that's what we're talking about. He's in Michigan, and that's where I'm from. Do you know that they are now requiring masks on two-year-olds? So here's, I'm going to read you. This is very short. It's only a couple sentences. My complete fails, Governors Cuomo, Phil Murphy in Jersey, yep. Newsom in California, Whitmer in Michigan, Pritzker in Illinois, and Tom Wolf in Pennsylvania. And here's the only thing I wrote. There's a special place for governors that lock kids out of classrooms for a year and a half, ordered sick COVID-19 patients back into nursing homes, did not practice their own orders, shut down tens of thousands of businesses, and still couldn't beat the U.S. average in COVID-19 deaths or excess all-cause deaths.
That's all you need to know is right there.
It's right there.
They cause more misery for worse results.
And again, all they, even if it was average results, that's it, I really hope history remembers this accurately, Chris.
Well, and you're right. Then, of course, my favorite of all the people violating their own stuff, right? I think Newsom at the French Laundry with hospital executives. That's probably my favorite.
Yeah, I mean, one of mine was, and there's such a long list, but Governor Pritzker shutting down high school athletics and then allowing his daughter to participate in equestrian in other states that did allow it, I thought was pretty egregious. I mean, I really do. I think that was just, and you know what I was writing in this is that I did a whole chapter on lockdown hypocrites, which you will probably love. Like, you'll do a segment just on this sometime. But the question is, if you believe this is scary, right? Like, my son and I go mountain climbing is a story I wrote, and we hire guides. Why? Because it's dangerous. We believe that, right? If you believed that all these restrictions really were, they mattered and for safety reasons, you wouldn't have all these violations. Newsom and all the healthcare lobbyists and executives wouldn't have had dinner at the French Laundry in close quarters without masks and all that. If they believed it, they just don't believe it.
Well, it's still going down, right? So here locally, the mayor of Tucson, Regina Romero, and her friend who's a TUSD school board member and a Pima County Board of Supervisors, Adelita Grijalva, they're like lockdown queens, right? Whenever Doug does something in the governor's office that tries to open things up, immediately the Regina has a press conference saying that he's killing everybody, right? So what happened was our women's basketball team made it to the championship game, which was beyond expectations. They played amazingly, so they did an event at Arizona Stadium to welcome them, and the first thing they did was take pictures with the coach without their masks on, right, with all these people around them. And you're sitting there going, but aren't you guys the lock? But you got to take a picture with the coach, so take your masks off. So it continues to this day. They would love to repress everyone in Tucson, but not if it screws up their photo op.
So I wrote a story about this about 5 or 6 weeks ago. There was a picture, some high school baseball players in California, they were taking their team photo, the senior photo of all the players, and they were photographed. God, I mean, it's amazing they're not in jail, right? They took a photograph with their masks off for the yearbook or something, and they got suspended from the team for a couple weeks. I mean, like, where are people's minds, Chris?
They've lost them, sir. They've lost them. So let's talk real quick. One last thing is, when we talk about the Twitters and the Facebooks, right, who, they keep saying they want to just, they don't want people to, just bull crap about or say false things about COVID or vaccines or whatever. Haven't they gone overboard in relation to censorship of people just putting stuff up as offering an other side of the story?
Yeah, I mean, just to tell you home, I'm still censored. It would take too long on the show, but I'm still being censored by Amazon, which is, this is coming up on 9 months later, in terms of placements and reviews and sponsorships and things like that. It's very...
Hold on. So you can buy the book on Amazon, but what are they doing to you?
If you went and did a search, it would not come up where it should under a COVID-19 book search relative to the book sales or the number of reviews. And so I've asked Amazon about it, and you know, you don't really get a, you get kind of a form letter back. But it's very Alex Berenson stuff. Alex and I have shared emails. We've exchanged a number of emails just about Amazon. That's like the one thing we have in common. And so that's one of them. I've had readers send me reviews that they submitted that Amazon said it violates their terms and conditions or whatever it is. And so they won't post reviews. I have reviews on my book, but they suppress a lot of them because I know this because I believe the readers, if they email me a submission and then they email me how it was denied, you know, it's pretty evident. And then they don't allow sponsorship advertising for any of the COVID books. By the way, I'm not singled out. It's any of their self-published books. So Jeffrey Tucker, who wrote the review of mine, he's in the same boat because he wrote a book called Liberty and Lockdowns, Liberty or Lockdown, and he's experienced the same suppression as me and Berenson and whomever else. So
a friend of the show, Taylor Carter, he posted up that he was on one of these vaccination side effects group on Facebook, right? Had 120,000 members filled with testimonials, photos, and documentation, and they literally, Facebook obliterated the entire page with 120,000 followers on it.
So Facebook, I think they canceled the Great Barrington Declaration page.
the one with the scientists people on it.
And YouTube removed the roundtable with Governor DeSantis hosting it with Scott Atlas and the three Barrington Declaration docs. That was about a two-hour roundtable that they did about 3 weeks ago. I watched it on YouTube, and now it's since been removed. And Jay Bhattacharya said the other day, I'd love the opportunity to talk to the 24-year-old intern who felt like we were giving disinformation and ask them about that. And the crux of why they got canceled was Martin Kulldorff from Harvard. He made a statement in there. I mean, there were a lot of similar ones, but he made a statement of, it's insane that five-year-olds are supposed to wear masks. He's got a five-year-old daughter. Okay, who had COVID, and they went to a ski resort in early March. I don't know if you saw the story, and they made her leave the ski hill unless she wore a mask. A five-year-old on a ski hill, Chris. We are off the rails.
We have lost our minds, my friend. I don't know how we're... It's going to be fascinating to see how... Are they going to start mandating these vaccines, right? Like when the kids start going back to college, right, and they see the college kids aren't getting COVID vaxes, is that going to be the new thing, how they're going to do it? Is, you want to come to our university, you better get vaccinated. I think that's the next step.
Megyn Kelly did a podcast on this last week, or this topic came up with a couple, I think it was a couple attorneys, but I don't recall, but she does a pretty good job. I'm a fan of hers. And her position on this legally was she thinks the vaccine passports will stick. Like if they make a move, that will probably be legally upheld. That was her. She's not supportive of this. She thinks all this stuff is nuts. But legally, she felt like the concept of a vaccine passport had legal legs.
Ugh. All right, sir. Thanks for the good efforts as always, man, and keep doing. And when do you think the next book's going to be done and ready to go?
Oh, it'll be the end of the summer. I'm submitting it June 1st, and it's actually going to a publisher, so it's got a little production work to go through. So probably the end of the summer.
And that's going to be called Burden of Proof, right?
No, that's just a chapter. I don't know what it's going to be called yet. It's going to be it's really good. I'll be sharing excerpts with you, you know, throughout the time in between now and then. But you'll be getting a copy of it.
Awesome. Now hold on, listener had said she wants. She wants to know where are you selling the most books? Is it Amazon or someone else? Somewhere else.
So, because I self-published the first book, the second one will be hard copies all over, you know, the country. But the first one, you upload these books, the manuscripts to Apple and to Barnes & Noble and Amazon. Amazon blows everybody away. Amazon has an effective monopoly on book sales. And Amazon can create a bestseller if they choose to, and they can suppress what would be a bestseller if they choose to. It's really powerful.
Awesome.
Powerful stuff.
All right, keep up the good work, my friend.
Thanks. Have a great week.
Michael Beatrice, COVID-19 lockdowns on trial. We've got a short segment coming back, and then Brother Joe at the top of the hour. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice. A little Frank. We don't play much Frank around here. We'll play more Frank than Jethro Tull, though. Sorry.
Are you going to open that can of worms?
Sorry.
This is actually a pretty cool version of Whipping Post by Frank Zappa.
Absolutely.
Like, it's got some soul.
I like it. It's a little bluesy. I did put up the, during the break, I did Photoshop Tim Steller's head on the Frank Drebin's body. So if you want to check it out on on my Facebook page right now, I guess I could email it to you if you wanted. wakeuptucsoncomments@gmail.com. Tim Steller's head on Frank Drebin's body as the fireworks factory is blowing up, saying, "There's nothing to see here. Please disperse." Hey, real quick, this is something I just want to get off. Billy 2 sent this out. Is if you ever wondered how much, you know, when you stream something, how much these artists are making. So Apple said it proudly pays 1 penny per stream from the Wall Street Journal. They say that they pay double what Spotify pays. I guess they're paying somewhere between 1/3 to 1/2 penny per stream. So I remember when I interviewed Roger Klein and the Peacemakers. And he was a great interview. And I said, well, how much money? Because he was like, it was like the number one, like, downloaded, where I go, well, how much money are you making off that? He goes, yeah, it doesn't even pay the rent, dude. So if I'm not touring or selling t-shirts or tequila, he's not making money. They said the Union of Musicians and Allied Workers say that all streamers should be paid at least 1 penny per stream. Apple has 60 million subscribers. Amazon, 55 million. Spotify has 155 million subscribers worldwide. So anyway, a penny a stream is the high rate now for when you play a tune. So Brother Joe, Blue Chip Planning, coming up next. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk.